When surrounded by people who tempt us to compromise, how do we maintain our biblical convictions? When upholding the truth costs far more than we're willing to pay, how do we say the hard thing rather than keel under pressure? Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll reminds us that it all begins with training our minds. All of us feel the temptation to compromise, but Paul said to the Romans, "Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think." Chuck titled today's message, "Thinking Biblically."
As we are working our way through this new series of messages, I've titled Wise Counsel for Troubled Times. We've come to a message today on thinking biblically. With each message of the 13 in the series, I've selected an individual from the scriptures who models this particular topic. And in this case, the man's name is Josiah. Most people are not familiar with Josiah or with his biography in 2 Chronicles 34 and 35, along with 2 Kings 22. You may not know this, but perhaps you do. In the Hebrew Bible, which is, of course, the original text of the Old Testament, the book from which I'm reading is the last book. Not Malachi, as appears in our English Bible, but the Chronicles form the last statement that God recorded through his authors of Scripture in the Old Testament. This is sort of the wrap-up of times in which they lived, which led ultimately to the darkest era in between the Testaments, making the study of a life like we're looking at today in Josiah all the more significant. Life had run its course, and they were by then at wit's end to know where to go next. Josiah took them through it. 2 Chronicles chapter 34, not to be confused with 2 Corinthians, 2 Chronicles chapter 34. I want to read several verses randomly through this chapter, beginning at verse 1. 2 Chronicles 34, 1 begins, "Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 31 years. He did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight and followed the example of his ancestor David. He did not turn away from doing what was right. During the 8th year of his reign, while he was still young, Josiah began to seek the God of his ancestor David. Then in the 12th year, he began to purify Judah and Jerusalem, destroying all the pagan shrines, the Asherah poles, and the carved idols and cast images. He ordered that the altars of Baal be demolished, and that the incense altars which stood above them be broken down. He also made sure that the Asherah poles, the carved idols, the cast images were smashed and scattered over the graves of those who had sacrificed to them. He burned the bones of the pagan priests on their own altars, and so he purified Judah and Jerusalem." Verse 8, "In the 18th year of his reign, after he had purified the land and the temple, Josiah appointed Shaphan, son of Azaliah, and Meshelah, the governor of Jerusalem, and Joah, son of Joahaz, the royal historian, to repair the temple of the Lord his God. They gave Hilkiah, the high priest, the money that had been collected by the Levites who served as gatekeepers at the temple of God. Verse 14. While they were bringing out the money collected at the Lord's temple, Hilkiah the priest found the book of the law of the Lord that was written by Moses. Hilkiah said to Shaphan, the court secretary, "I have found the book of the law in the Lord's temple." Then Hilkiah gave the scroll to Shaphan. Shaphan took the scroll to the king and reported, "Your officials are doing everything they were assigned to do. The money that was collected at the temple of the Lord has been turned over to the supervisors and workmen." Shaphan also told the king, "Hilkiah the priest has given me a scroll." So Shaphan read it to the king. When the king heard what was written in the law, he tore his clothes in despair. Then he gave these orders to Hilkiah, Ahikam, son of Shaphan, Achbor, son of Micaiah, Shaphan, the court secretary, and Azariah, the king's personal advisor, "Go to the temple, speak to the Lord for me and for all the remnant of Israel and Judah. Inquire about the words written in the scroll that has been found. For the Lord's great anger has been poured out on us because our ancestors have not obeyed the word of the Lord. We have not been doing everything this scroll says we must do." Verse 29. Then the king summoned all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. The king went up to the temple of the Lord with all the people of Judah and Jerusalem, along with priests and Levites, all the people from the greatest to the least. There the king read to them the entire book of the covenant that had been found in the Lord's temple. The king took his place of authority beside the pillar and renewed the covenant in the Lord's presence. He pledged to obey the Lord by keeping all his commands, laws, and decrees with all his heart and soul. He promised to obey all the terms of the covenant that were written in the scroll. Verse 33. So Josiah removed all detestable idols from the entire land of Israel and required everyone to worship the Lord their God. And throughout the rest of his lifetime, they did not turn away from the Lord, the God of their ancestors.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To search the Scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message called Thinking Biblically.
No one can deny the power of the mind. The power of the mind. Thinking a certain way enables us to accomplish remarkable things. For example, those who finally get serious about losing weight begin to train themselves to think differently about what they eat and how much they eat and when they exercise and how they exercise. It's a matter of the mind. Those who have determined to make better grades in school must learn to think differently about getting a great education. And when they do, their grades go up. The best detectives must learn how to think like the criminal. thinking that way puts them on the trail of those clues that lead ultimately to a conviction. Soldiers in battle learn to think like the enemy, otherwise their strategy is useless. The mind thinks like the other opponent, and in doing so, prepares for the battle and ultimately for victory. Those who overcome addictions train themselves ultimately to cultivate a whole new way of thinking about their drug of choice. Prisoners of war survive in camps because of their thoughts. They refuse to think, "This is where I will die." They forever think, "I will survive. I will escape." And those thoughts are so powerful, they do in fact survive. I read this past week about a remarkable man who ultimately became a Broadway star. He had been in prison for years, serving time on a manslaughter charge. After all of those years, he finally was released and ultimately pursued a whole different lifestyle and became a success on the stage. An interviewer asked him how he was able to make such a remarkable transition into such an outstanding acting career from the world of the prison cell. His reply was swift and very insightful. He said, "Unlike all the other prisoners, I never decorated my cell." To him, his cell was never home. He was always thinking of getting through it and ultimately pursuing a destiny beyond that. Literally. The power of the mind isn't a new concept. All of you have heard of it. In fact, it is as old as the book we have in our lap called the Bible. Filled with examples of people who thought differently than those around them. For example, in Numbers 13, there are 12 spies sent into the land of Canaan to determine if the people of the Hebrews could invade and conquer. 10 of the spies came back saying, "There's no way." Interestingly, 2 of the spies who had seen the very same obstacles in the land of Canaan said, "There is every way we will conquer them. It's only a matter of our invading and trusting in our God." Isn't it interesting? 2 had the power to think beyond the 10, and the 2 were right. In the 17th chapter of 1 Samuel, there's a giant that is marching across the valley of Elah. Saul and his army are intimidated by Goliath. Suddenly, David shows up. David, still a teenager, but he looked at the giant completely differently than Saul and his army, and you know the result. He slew that giant. When you get to the New Testament, you find the Apostle Paul, earlier known as Saul of Tarsus, converted. Amazing story of conversion. Saul has been persecuting Christians and approving of their murder. And out of the blue, on the road to Damascus, he is converted. The disciples who had known how notorious he had been, had no room in their mind for a converted Saul of Tarsus, except one man, Barnabas, who ultimately put his arm around Paul's shoulder, said, "You come with me," and he introduced him to the disciples, and he endorsed his conversion. And in fact, as a result, Saul of Tarsus was accepted by the circle of believers who once had wanted to put him to death. The power of the mind. Let me give you some thoughts on thinking biblically out of Romans chapter 12. Turn there before we go back to 2 Chronicles 34. Romans 12 is very familiar, I realize, and I like that. So this is not new territory for most of us. What you may not have remembered is that Paul is not simply writing Romans 12. He's on his knees pleading for the attention of the reader. I plead with you. I beg of you, the old King James. I beseech you by the mercies of God. I plead with you to do what? Look closely. I plead with you, dear brothers and sisters, that you give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. You are walking around with bodies, and your body belongs to the Lord just as your heart and soul. Give him your body. Place your body on the altar. One wag has said the problem with putting ourselves on the altar is that we tend to want to crawl off the altar when things get tough. That's true. That's why he's pleading. Get on the altar, stay on the altar, remain there as a sacrifice. Look at what it says, that we are to give our bodies to God because of all he has done for us. Let these bodies be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. This is true worship. This is worship at its finest. I give him my mind, my eyes, my ears, my mouth, my hands, my thoughts, my emotions, my motives, my drive, my goals. They're all his. And I sacrifice my will for his will. Now, this is truly the way we worship him. Our problem is we are human and we have old natures that fight against that. In fact, we keep an ear very carefully peeled for the world around us. That's the world we were raised in. That's the world we were educated in. That's the world of our neighbors and most of our friends and of course, the media all around us. And so he now tells us, after saying what we are to do, here's how you do it. Starts with a negative. Look at verse 2. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Now, there's a sermon right there. You and I are surrounded by a behavior and by customs in this culture that are absolutely acceptable. In fact, they're encouraged. In some places, we feel coerced. The world has its mold. One of the paraphrases puts it this way: don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold. Meaning what? Don't start thinking like the world thinks. Don't start acting like the world acts. In light of that, we need a little help with a word or two here. Look here at verse 2 and locate that word world. Yeah, the Greek word is aion, A-I-O-N, aion, and it usually rendered age, age. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this age. What does that mean? Well, the world around us has a scheme of thinking, and it is easy to be drawn into it, to start acting like it. And fitting into the way it is. I found this helpful as I looked into the words of a man named Trench, one of the great scholars of linguistic studies. Listen to what he writes. All that floating mass of thoughts, opinions, speculations, impulses, aims, aspirations, and any time current in the world which may be impossible to seize and accurately define, but which constitute a most real and effective power, being the moral or immoral atmosphere which at every moment of our lives we inhale and again inevitably exhale. All this is included in ION. There's something about our times that we can feel. When you travel to certain countries, you sometimes feel the darkness. When you're in certain settings, you sometimes feel the evil. And what is significant is often we don't feel it, but it's there nevertheless, making its appeal. If you want to start thinking correctly, you've got to be aware that the world is at odds with the things of God. Continue here. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world or this age, but let God transform you. There's another word. We get our word metamorphosis from the Greek term translated transform. It refers to an inward change that leads to a radical change of thinking. I like the way the Living Translation renders this. Let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. There it is. Changing the way you think. Don't let your mind absorb the thinking of the majority. Don't get lost in the horrendous propaganda of the times in which you live, all the politically correct information, all of the stuff of our society. Watch it, watch it. Be careful. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. I know friends who tell me stories of how their kids were raised under their watchful eye, and they were careful about their education while they were living at home, and then they made their way off to a university, happened to have gotten a scholarship, and the university may have been of another philosophy than the home. And when the child comes home, not a child any longer, but now a young adult, the parents notice that they think differently. They have been impacted by the influence of that school or some professor or groups of professors who have affected the way they think. It will lead to a disastrous end if that continues. I like the way Earl Rodmacher refers to this in his little book, You and Your Thoughts. I quote, "If we take on the thought patterns of the society in which we live, the result will be absolutely disastrous. We'll have lost our ability to decide what is true and right on the basis of objective revelation, the Bible. Instead, we'll be floundering around in a sea of emotions, not knowing where to drop anchor." Good words. That right there describes the majority of those with whom we spend our time in this world. Now, not only must we grasp an understanding of what God has written, we must apply this truth in our everyday life. We must see how it fits into the way we decide, the way we evaluate. Paul's pleading here is that we change the way we think. Why? End of the verse. "Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect."
Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll reinforces the biblical mandate for thinking biblically. In case you may have missed a portion of today's study, remember you can catch up with other programs by downloading the convenient mobile app, subscribing to the daily podcast, or by listening to the programs directly from our website. You'll find all the details at insightworld.org. At Insight for Living, we believe that your learning often starts with this daily program, but it doesn't need to end there. We've prepared a wide variety of resources that'll help you think biblically. And today, I'd like to point you toward a book Chuck's written that complements our subject. It's called Finding God When the World's on Fire. In the refreshing style you've come to expect from our teacher, Chuck helps you see all of life through the lens of Scripture, no matter what problems come your way. Again, it's called Finding God When the World's on Fire. And you'll find all the details for purchasing a copy at insight.org/offer. In recent days, we've made a concerted effort to bring more friends into our family of supporters. And perhaps today's the day you're ready to raise your hand and say, in effect, "Yes, Chuck, I'm ready to join the team." Well, the best way to leverage your financial support is to become a monthly companion. In this role, your monthly gift is channeled directly toward reaching other people with Insight for Living, so they can benefit from life lessons just as you have. One of your fellow listeners left this comment. It said, "I've been going through a particularly difficult time, and
and find myself encouraged and strengthened as I listen. Bless you for your faithfulness and for making this ministry available to those of us who listen. Well, these special moments are sponsored by our monthly companions and all those who give. To become a monthly companion right now, here's the number to call. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888 or sign up online at insight.org/monthly companion. To give a one-time donation, call us. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888.
There's an easy and effective way to leverage your support of Chuck Swindoll's ministry. Become a monthly companion.
You know, for me, it was an easy decision. I've gotten far more from Insight for Living than I'll ever be able to give back. So signing up was an easy choice.
Sign up today. If you're listening in the United States, call 800-772-8888.
It makes me happy to know that my gift is actually helping someone get in touch with God's grace.
In this hostile, me-first world, people are craving just one gentle whiff of God's goodness and grace. And when we respond today, our simple act of generosity will be transformed into that irresistible, sweet aroma of grace for someone we may never meet this side of eternity.
Do for some unsuspecting person what someone once did for you. Become a monthly companion. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org/monthly companion. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll continues this message about thinking biblically, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Thinking Biblically, was copyrighted in 2013, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2017 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.